Support for KCUR's Up to Date comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Farmers and ranchers across the state of Kansas are struggling to recover from fires that raced across parts of the state in mid-December. Those fires were driven by a record-shattering windstorm that swept across the state, taking down power lines and driving the fires. In all, the Kansas Forest Service recorded 16 wildfires in western and central Kansas on December 15th that singed more than 160,000 acres in 13 counties. Joining us now to talk about this is a reporter who's seen some of this devastation firsthand, and that's David Kondos. He's a reporter with the Kansas News Service and High Plains Public Radio. David, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Describe what you saw when you were in Russell County and driving through, I think, three other counties, David.
Yeah, it was unexpected, you know, even for me. Like, I live out there in Hayes, so I knew when the storm came in. I knew there were fires nearby. I'd been hearing about it. But when I went there, you know, a few days later, it struck me. It was things I didn't even think about. Like, you know, some of the fields were blackened, were burned. You could see where the fire had swept through. But then some of them were tan. Some of them were brown because, you know, if you saw images of the dust storm that came through, there was a layer of dust and soot. And so some of them were, you know, like I said, black, tan. Some of them were kind of gray ash. I mean, there were, you know, tree stumps. There were, you know, you think of wooden fence posts with barbed wire on it. Some of the fence posts had burned up.
There was picture on the news service of just the bottom part of one of those fence posts just completely burned away.
So some of the barbed wire was just hanging there. There were, yeah, like, if you imagine Great Plains yucca plant. So it was like the long pointy stem plant. Some of those were burned, and you would just see kind of the nub of it sticking out of the ground, and all the stems and leaves had been burned away. And same thing with grass. I mean, you think of, you know, prairie grass, like a little blue stem or something like that. It was again burned down to the nub, and you could just see these little nodes, you know, kind of spread out in this patchwork with the dirt in between them. It was very striking to see. And like I said, some of it was covered in this dust, and it had kind of these ripples in it from the wind that really looked like a desert. Like, I don't know how else to describe it.
I mean, all that just leads me to think that recovery from something this devastating, it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, this fire was huge, and they were spread across the state. So the fire that I went to in those four counties was larger than all of Wyandotte County, just to give people some perspective of how big it was. But it wasn't the only one. There were ones going throughout the state. But like you said, you know, recovery for you know, different people are going to be different. You know, the fire, the rancher that I talked to, the fire killed, he estimated, between one third and one half of his cattle. Other people, you know, in the area that he had talked to had lost their homes, lost their, you know, tractors.
Wow.
And so this is, you know, for some people, it's where they live. It's their business. It's, you know, a family tradition that's been passed down to them through generations. It's going to be a long process of recovery. And I guess to your question, I mean, they've set up like GoFundMe donations for kind of immediate needs. But I think it seemed like a lot of people are still kind of wrapping their heads around it.
What kicked off these wildfires? How did these things happen?
Yeah. And so, well, I mean, the main thing was it was very dry, and then the windstorm came through. And so in Hayes, for example, obviously we just got some snow, but previous to that, we had not had measurable precipitation for nearly 2 months. So it had been about a month and a half at the time of the fire. So things were very dry, and the grass, you know, it just ignited. And so, you know, when the windstorm came through, the Kansas Forest Service hadn't determined exactly the cause of this particular fire. But they know that sometimes with this storm, power lines were blown over, and that can lead to sparks from the the electricity as those things get destroyed, and that can ignite, you know, nearby grass, and then the wind takes it from there.
And just to be super clear here, there wasn't just one fire here. Mm-hmm. Looking at a map again on the Kansas News Service, there were spot fires, different fires really across the entire state.
Yeah. And so this one is up kind of north of Hays, northeast of Hays.
This is the four-county
fire. This is the four-county fire, yeah, which was the largest one that day. But yeah, like you said, there were smaller fires that were certainly not insignificant. People lost homes and land. At least one man I know lost his life. But yeah, they were spread out from Wichita County, which is like west north of Garden City, up north of Hays, Ness County, Rush County, which is south of Hays. And so that was again part of the challenge, or part of the, you know, what made this such an unprecedented event was the speed with which it came in, and the widespread nature of all these fires.
I want to go back to one of your points here, because I'm struck by this really painful fact that some of these farmers, David, some of these ranchers didn't lose just an outhouse here and a tractor there. They lost everything. And for some of them, this is a way of life, as you point out, that goes back generations here. That's a lot of loss.
Yeah. And cattle is a big part of the identity of, you know, not just individuals, but of this region. I mean, cattle is a huge economic force in western and central Kansas. Ranching, you know, feedlots, you know, it's a, kind of what drives a lot of the economy in the area. Like you mentioned, for people, this might be, you know, the cattle might be descendants of a herd that their father or their, you know, grandfather started. So, yeah, it's a big toll.
You know, we're talking here about some fairly remote areas of the state. I'm wondering how much help is available to these folks when it comes to, I'm thinking like social services, help like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one thing, I mean, you mentioned the remoteness. One thing that I heard when I went out there a few days after the fire was that they were just having trouble finding materials. So like they were wanting to, you know, start rebuilding their fences, because that was one of the immediate needs, because cattle were, you know, getting out.
But there weren't fence posts to be had.
Yeah, there weren't fence posts to be had because the need was so great and it was a remote area. So that's just one example. But to social services, they just had a community meeting out there in the town of Natoma a few days ago. Governor Kelly came out. People from Kansas Department of Agriculture, USDA were there, kind of talking people through, you know, what is available for the recovery. I know just two quick examples. Governor Kelly said she was going to try to get sales tax removed retroactively on buying fencing materials and things like that. Again, kind of to your point of the magnitude of this loss, for people who lost homes, they might have lost their birth certificates, marriage certificates. Mm. I mean, just like, you know, any time you have a house fire. And so another thing Governor Kelly said was they were going to, you know, try to remove barriers, remove costs for getting some of those documents replaced. And then one other thing real quick that they mentioned in regard to this recovery was the mental health aspect of it as well. Mm. And so someone from High Plains Mental Health Center, which operates in that area, was there just reminding people that, you know, it's not just, you know, rebuilding physically. It's, you know, making sure that you're taking care of yourself, taking care of your family, because it's, you know, it's trauma.
I'm thinking that at the end of the day, a lot of this is going to come down to neighbor helping neighbor. That's how things get done out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's, they sprung into action right away. I mean, you saw the Russell County, which is where most of this particular fire took place. They had, you know, very quickly at their 4-H building nearby, they had a donation center set up. People could come bring, you know, hay bales, come bring clothes, come bring phone chargers. I mean, all these, you know, things that people need. And then, you know, just for a kind of a microcosm experience, when I was there talking with this rancher, there were people who had driven in from two counties away from the north, like along the border of Nebraska. And they had come in with their four-wheelers. They didn't know this rancher. They had just come in to help, and they helped. They helped gather up the bodies of his dead cattle and bring them in to bury them. And then when that job was done, they moved on to the next the next piece of land to help the next person.
You know, you also wonder, you know, in a story like this, like this is a big deal for now, for a couple weeks, people talking about this, people are concerned. But then, like so many news stories, these things tend to fade away with time. And you wonder what the consequences of that might be as people begin to forget.
Yeah, and that's tough. That's something that was brought up to me when I went out there. And I know that's, you know, just more broadly, that's a common concern in rural areas more generally, is that feeling of being forgotten, being, you know, passed over. And so that's, I know that's a concern. That's something that Governor Kelly mentioned specifically in her speech when she went to this meeting. But yeah, I mean, even, you know, things like this, making sure that it continues to be brought up, that people are aware that it's not going to be, you know, a couple weeks of recovery. For some people, it's going to be a year, 2 years, and so it's going to be a long path.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about these Kansas wildfires that sparked across the state in mid-December and the devastation that's been left behind. I'm visiting with David Kondos, a reporter with the Kansas News Service. I want to bring in a rancher that he profiled in one of his pieces. That's Rich Kester. He's a rancher from Russell County who lost more than a third of his 200 head herd and saw the fire. It completely engulfed his entire 800-acre pasture. Rich, good morning. It's nice to have you, and I appreciate you taking some time.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Hello, David.
Hello, Rich.
Well, maybe the way to begin, Rich, is by asking just how you're doing.
Well, I'm coping with it. It's kind of like a big undertaking.
When David interviewed you, Rich, you were still locating and moving cattle. How many of your herd were you able to find?
Well, I had gathered up about 150 of them, you know, anywhere from little babies to cows and everything in between. And I moved them back to my home where I could take care of them. And from there, you know, you have to assess injuries and things like that, and you know, I've lost a few more of them, and then I walk through the herd after I feed them, and I see more things that I'm going to have to take care of later on.
I bet.
And wonder if these mamas that are going to have babies, if they're going to be able to feed their babies. That's the problem I'm going to have, because they may not have milk, and I have to take them away, the baby calves, and then.
Hey, are you able to tell?
You don't have to deal with that.
Are you able to tell, Rich? We're talking about the trauma of these wildfires and the impact they've had on people. How about the impact on the animals that you watch every day? What have you noticed there?
Well, you know, they're pretty resilient if you can give them, you know, enough food and water, and they're pretty tough, you know. But there's a certain aspect when it burns, you know, that fire comes up from, you know, at their feet. And, you know, I have some of them anywhere from that are blind, but that, you know, I don't know why they're blind, but, you know, it burned their eyes a little bit, so they can't see very well. But the rest of their body is okay, you know, not burned at all. And then some of them are just scorched a little bit, you know, but they kind of walk around, and some of them, their feet aren't going to let them, you know, because this is very important for cattle, because they have to walk, and their feet aren't going to make it. You know, they just, they're, and then, like I said, the, It's just a combination of things you see, and sometimes it just creeps up on you, you know. And I walk, after I feed them, I walk through them, and I can start telling a few more things about what's happening to them. And I'm going to have to, you know, make a hard choice on what I need to do later on. And, you know, some of the things is just like, and it doesn't really help when we get excessive cold all of a sudden like this, and snow, and when it's so cold. You know, but as long as you can get enough water to them and feed and some shelter out of the wind, they survive pretty well, you know.
You know, I understand that fire and the winds left a whole lot of ash and dust covering the grounds, and David and I were talking about that. It's a foot deep in some places, Rich, as you well know. Do you expect your pastures to recover come spring, or any idea how long something like this is going to take?
Well, I if we get moisture and the right type of temperature, you know, the native grasses are pretty hardy. They're used to being burned in the past, you know.
Right.
But I think if you never know if it was just too hot for some places or how much it's going to burn in the dryness. But if we get moisture, it will come back. It's just that, you know, it may not be as fast as we normally do when we have the old grass there to protect it and hold the moisture better. And the one thing I did notice, you know, when David commented about how you just have those little nubs sticking out of the grass. Well, you know, some places I noticed if you threw out a little bit of water on the ground, it just would roll off like water just rolled off the soil, just like water off a duck's back, you know. It just wouldn't soak in. And so if we get any hard rain or anything, it won't soak in very much and just start to wash instead of soaking in. But if we have small rains and things like that, if snow soaks in slow, it probably is more beneficial than anything.
I'm visiting with rancher Rich Kester, who suffered big losses in the wildfires in Kansas in mid-December. There's so much to be done to get recovery rolling here, Rich. I'm thinking about insurance and fencing and applying for relief funds and loans. Where are you starting? Where does that process begin for you?
Well, you know, my first thing is to take care of the cattle and feed them. But then, you know, in between, there's things from, you know, people that want to donate, you know, like the KLA, which is the Kansas Livestock Association.
Right.
And then there's also, any kind of donation, and they're going to, you know, see who has the most needs, which is the right way to be. But for me, it's, you know, having to work with some of my insurance first, you know, but it's a wait and see a little bit here to see in the next couple of weeks what we can assess. And then there's the USDA and Federal Service Agency. They're all, you know, having things programs that we can apply for, you know, whether it's cost sharing on fencing and help here. At the meeting, you know, they just go over a broad view of it, but it's better if you can be in person and talk to the technicians at the Federal Service Agency, and they'll give you, this way you can answer the specific questions, and they'll give you the answers to them, and then know where to go look for. And they'll, you know, there's a lot of programs that will help, but we just have to, you know, find them and see what works best for each person's situation. You know, everyone's a little different.
Rich, it sounds a little overwhelming.
Well, it's just like now, you know, it is. It's, you know, the last few days, I get up in the morning and see my own, I get it in it late at night because I'm taking care of the cattle with the cold and everything else, and then trying to do the other paperwork and call, and it's just kind of tough to get around every place. It's just not enough of me.
Well, maybe the toughest question of all here, Rich, how is all this hitting you? How are you processing it all? How are you handling it?
Well, I guess I'm okay. I mean, I've been through it a lot, you know, and over the years, in the 30 years I've had the pasture, we've had blizzards at that pasture where I had cattle up there and it was a blizzard. And then we've had floods where we get big 10-inch rains up there. And then we went through some droughts where I didn't have hardly any cattle up there, or didn't have water, so I had to haul water. And, you know, you just go with the flow and do the best job you can, and that's all you can do. And I feel like in my life I just prepare and keep going on because you just have to tough it out.
I think you told David that you're one of the lucky ones here because your home ultimately survived. I gather that wasn't the case for a lot of your neighbors out there.
No, you know, I wasn't sure, but, you know, I was at that meeting on Wednesday, and I know the one lady talked about like 26 homes, I think, were burned. But then it ranges from, usually if your buildings are burned like that in your house, it took probably the rest of your buildings and equipment with it if it was there. And then also I would say, you know, everybody in between, someone just had pastures. Some, you know, didn't have any cattle in them. Some lost buildings, you know, some lost cattle. You know, it's just everywhere. Yeah, in between, everybody's got a different type loss and a different need, you know, and it's not to mean that some are more important than others, but, you know, everybody tries to help and see what we need to do. You know, my one neighbor, he lost some cattle, but then he lost a bunch of his outbuildings and, you know, shelter belts to help protect his fences, so he moved all his cattle out to someplace else, and then, you know, trying to rebuild so that he can bring them back and feed and maybe rebuild. He's a young man, you know, and so he's more of a, you know, that can rebuild and, you know, buy cattle back and start again, I guess. And that's what he's looking at.
I was wondering, you know, in hearing the description of the damage to the fields and all the soot and ash that are in the fields these days, how do you feed your herd when so much has been lost?
Well, since I brought them back to where I can feed them, you know, I can take care of them because I'm not there at the fire burn. But, you know, where it's burned so much, you know, if they bring them back, you know, they got to make sure they have the fencing to keep them in, and then and enough feed and protection, because, you know, just like this weekend, it's bitter cold and everything, and the water freezes up. And so I don't know if they have electricity there. I'm sure they do, but there's the other thing is, I don't know if some of the power lines went down in the rural area that, you know, around the fire, which I'm sure they did. I'm sure it's probably back up by now. But, you know, they have to pump water and things like that for the cattle, and they can get by, you know, but if it burned up some of their buildings and stuff, I don't know where they have protection, you know, whether it's just out in the open or if their shelter belts, you know, where the trees can block some of the wind and help them.
Right.
You know, they have to make a decision on what they're doing there. And like I said, everybody's got a little different situation, and I'm able to, you know, take care of mine, but it's just hard to, you know, separate out, and it's made extra work and extra things that it takes longer to do things.
Well, and Rich, then, when I say goodbye to you here in a few seconds, what's next? What are you going to go do next after you say goodbye to us?
Well, you know, I'm go out and take care of the cattle I have here, and you know, feed and water. That's an everyday event. And take care of, you know, if anything's sick, and that's my daily routine. I've already been out, and in fact, I'm sitting down in my office right now, where it's a quiet place, just to take, you know, a little time and listen to you and be on the radio show, and then I immediately get back up and start again and have to make decisions of what I need to do during the day. You know, with the cattle and feed and water, and that's daily routine.
Well, Rich, I sure appreciate you taking some time with us. Rich Kester, a rancher from Russell County who lost a lot during the wildfires last month. We'll be pulling for you, Rich. Thanks a lot for taking some time.
You bet. I'm glad to do it.
Thank you. And if our listeners are looking for ways to help those who are affected, the Kansas Department of Agriculture has set up a recovery resources hub. You can go to the department's website and look for Kansas Wildfire Recovery Resources. We'll have a link on the up-to-date webpage later today. Well, David Condos, you know, one thing you've said that you learned is that cattle ranchers have spent, in some cases, generations, you know, getting their breeding stock line established. And in some cases, as we're hearing here this morning, all that's been lost. I had never thought of that part of this either, which only adds to the devastation here.
Right, yeah. I hadn't thought about that either. But like for a rancher like Mr. Kester, for example, he's a cow-calf operation. And so, like he said, he's got moms and babies that he's, you know, kind of breeded over the years. And ranchers do that, you know, for their business, for the type of cattle that they want to raise and sell. And they do that for their specific piece of land. Like they figure out, you know, over the years what they want and what works best on their land. So it's not just losing, you know, a piece of property like a car that can be instantly replaced with a newer one. It's, you know, years, decades of work And, you know, that just can't be replaced as easily.
You know, Kansas has these fire suppression teams that fight fires like this. Any sense of how effective they were? I know the winds were 100 miles per hour, and that would make it almost impossible for anybody, I assume.
Yeah, well, I think one measure of the effectiveness is that it didn't, you know, spread into a town like Hayes, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously there was widespread devastation, but it was...
Were you worried about it at one point?
I probably should have been more worried than I was. Like, for example, the town just west of Hayes, Ellis, they announced it was going to be evacuated as one of the other smaller fires in the next county over got close. They ended up calling that evacuation off. But it was pretty close. And I think, you know, it could have been a lot worse. I think like the spokeswoman I talked to from the Kansas Forest Service, who was, one of these state fire suppression teams that came in. She said that, it was a challenge to get there immediately because they're coming in from eastern Kansas, and it was just too dangerous. As you have 100-mile-hour wind gusts, you have all this dust, you know, that's not safe driving conditions to send people into, that they weren't able to bring in the helicopters, for example, that kind of toted water and dropped water. They weren't able to bring them in until the following day. And so they were able to help, and they got there the next day, and they stayed for a couple days. That was part of the challenge, was that the storm itself was so bad, and it was hard to travel through.
Were any towns hit in this fire? Were any towns wiped off the map because of the fire?
I don't know. I don't know if wiped off the map would be the right descriptor, but the town just north of where Mr. Kester is a town called Paradise, and that was hit. I drove through it after I talked with him, and there were buildings destroyed there. It's tough because it was fortunate that it did not end up hitting. Like, obviously, we've seen what happened in Colorado just recently, where a very similar fire with high winds and dry grass conditions happened to hit, you know, some of these suburban areas. And so I would say that's, you know, some of the risk is that next time this happens in Kansas, it could be, you know, even in a more dense populated area and cause more damage. Not to take away from the devastation that did happen for the people who were in the path.
So as a reporter, then, where do you go on a story like this moving forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, like we mentioned earlier, they don't want this to be forgotten. And that's just, you know, that's just the nature of the news cycle, is there will be the next big story, the next, you know, as far as the national media or regional media is concerned, there'll be the next, you know, disaster, you know, probably within the next few months. And so, you know, I feel like my job, since I live out there, you know, I want to stay on top of this. I want to stay in touch with people like Mr. Kester to see what, you know, challenges they're encountering, to see how that recovery is going. Because we've mentioned, it's going to be a long road.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming in, David. David Kondos, a reporter with the Kansas News Service and High Plains Public Radio. Thanks for your reporting. Keep going. Appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet.